Good evening, folks, and welcome back on this Saturday, the 9th day of April, 2022. I'm your host, Mark Call, and this was another one of those weeks where we didn't get a world war, but we got just about everything else. But primarily, though, you could argue that what we got was a lot of distraction from things that we've been lied to about for years that are finally starting to come out, literally oozing between the cracks, if you will. But among those stories that are finally starting to get some traction, the big ones have to do with the coming famine. You were, of course, a conspiracy theorist if you could see the flashing neon signs pointing in that direction. And the increasingly obvious, to everyone except the most CNN-addled, hyperinflation. And we're going to explore that in some more detail in just a few minutes. But I want to start off today with a couple of those stories that really ought to bring it home for those that haven't been paying attention to what's really going on because they've been distracted by the BS coming from the waste stream, including most recently the war in Ukraine, which hasn't yet expanded into World War III and a nuclear first strike on the United States, not for lack of trying, but has at least managed to shift the focus of the dumbed down from the 27th round, or whatever they're up to now anyway, of the Zyklon B injection, and the left's latest boogeyman, Vladimir Putin. But very quietly, the far left and their Ministry of Propaganda has been greasing the skids for the deep sixing of their CCP puppet, the senile one masquerading as president in the White House, creepy quid pro Joe Biden. And, of course, his criminally evil crackhead son, Hunter. Yes, the New York Times admitted a couple of weeks back, we lied through our teeth about the Hunter Biden laptop. We did everything we could to bury it, because we knew darn well it was real. We had an election to rig, after all. And even some of the other worst offenders on the far left, masquerading as journalists, have been forced to admit, we knew it was never a conspiracy theory, but we're not about to admit that. And just to show that the six-month delay between conspiracy theory hysteria and admitting it was a fact all along has passed, the Daily Mail has this headline. Secret Service is paying more than $30,000 taxpayer dollars a month to rent out a mansion in Malibu to protect the crackhead son of the imposter, Hunter Biden. Taxpayers are footing the bill for a six-bedroom Spanish-style estate that has, quote, gorgeous ocean views. And it's right next to Hunter's own $20,000-a-month Malibu mansion. The Secret Service, though, has declined to comment. When asked about the payoff by DailyMail.com, other than to say they don't comment about the means, methods, and resources used to conduct their protective operations of criminals who deserve far better than any of you peons out there. And all of this as the probe being conducted, what they laughably call a Trump administration holdover in Delaware, is reportedly heating up with grand jury testimony about just how crooked the first son has always been under the cover of the big guy, Big Daddy, the senile marionette-in-chief. All of this as the White House, it says, faces a deluge of ethical scrutiny, good grief, related to the president's son and his so-called foreign business operations, which look a whole hell of a lot like treason to anybody that isn't also on the payroll. Because it was reported last week, for example, that entities linked to Hunter Biden and his criminally evil uncle, in this case, James Biden, got about $5 million across 14 months beginning in 2017, including from an energy firm with strong links to, what else, Beijing. What do you bet they're loving the really cheap Russian gas they're getting now? Thank you, Joe. The story goes on to say that the property includes six bedrooms and six bathrooms, along with swanky amenities like a gym, a tasting room, pool, barbecue, and spa. Doesn't say how many of those have already been converted here to crack lounges and hooker parlors, but it does say that a spiral staircase in the taxpayer cash-funded mansion leads to a castle-like tower in the master retreat with a wet bar. The listing, according to ABC, bills the home as resort-style living at its finest. Hey, nothing but the best for the crackheads that are destroying the United States, and it's a perfect retreat for discerning clientele and those who protect them from ever being held accountable for their many crimes. Those who even try, however, are finding out that if they even survive at all, it's probably not going to be in such luxury digs, and certainly not paid for with newly printed taxpayer bucks. One case in point was the whistleblower who provided copies of the Hunter Biden laptop to several elected officials. Uh-oh, that was a mistake. And major news outlets, yep, ditto, back in early 2021, now claims that he has recovered an additional 450 gigabytes of deleted material from that laptop that was previously unknown. And hopefully you know, folks, that when you delete something on a computer, normally the file actually stays there. The computer just forgets where it was. They may or may not eventually get overwritten, and they may or may not still then be recoverable. Anyway, the not-so-deleted files include 80,000 images and videos and more than 120,000 archived emails. Oops, sorry, Joe. According to an exclusive report by the Daily Mail, picked up by places like the Gateway Pundit. For the past 2 weeks, it says, Jack Maxey, former co-host of Steve Bannon's War Room podcast, has been in Switzerland because he's scared to stay in the formerly free United States, working with a team of IT experts to analyze and recover those deleted files that he and his colleagues found hidden away on the Hunter hard drive, and they intend, they say, to publish those files online over the next few weeks in a searchable database. Quick aside here, that doesn't mean, of course, that peons will ever be able to actually access them, or if they do, not for very long, because Maxey says another story from the same Daily Mail claimed that one former intelligence agency senior staffer told him, just after he'd received the hard drive back in 2020, quote, if you don't release enough of this so that they know you can release all of it, I'm telling you, brother, you're a dead man. He took their advice in October 2020 and posted batches of emails and other files from the laptop on file sharing sites. But after just about an hour, the links were, who could have thought it, taken down. He said he believes the U.S. government was hunting down files from the laptop posted online, flagging them to various companies, whereupon evidently they became disappeared. Quote, there were 5 drop boxes, 2 in the United States, 1 in New Zealand, 2 in the U.K., all the same drop boxes in which they tell us child pornography is shared around the globe without any consequence because they can't look at that. But these are all 5 Eyes countries, English speaking, with an intelligence sharing agreement, and they were all ripped down, meaning that our intelligence services, still having not even acknowledged that they have Hunter Biden's laptop, were obviously diligently doing cache searches across the internet to find out if any of that stuff was being released. And he said, this should terrify every single decent person in the West. And the implication seems clear. While the federal agencies are protecting the distribution of child porno, hey, they've got themselves their very own Supreme Court justice, almost, at this point, not to mention sex trafficking networks. It's a whole different story when it comes to exposing the criminality of those on the inside. So back to the main story, which tells us that Maxey has been hiding out in Switzerland, he says, because he and his team fear retaliation from the Biden regime. And ever since he came into the possession of Hunter's laptop, Maxey says he's been constantly harassed by a whole array of federal 3-letter agencies claiming to be, law enforcement. Unless, of course, it's real criminals that are doing real crimes. Immediately after he began sharing the contents of the laptop publicly, visits from federal agents began, and his associates started receiving strange phone calls, putting Maxey in fear of his life. And as he explained it to the Daily Mail, he started seeing black suburban SUVs appear outside his house, and former U.S. intelligence officer friends that he'd shared copies with told him they'd been receiving those strange calls. In fact, he said, no news organizations, up until he finally got a hold of the Daily Mail, would even take the information. Very dear friends of mine, he said, the sharp tip of the spear were making welfare calls to me every day because basically they wanted to see if I was still alive. Even before the New York Post finally broke the story, he said, the FBI, the DNC, the Waste Stream Media, and the Swamp have been in possession of those materials now for years. And they sat on it in the months leading up to the election, failing in their duties. According to Maxey and a lot of other Americans, the wide-scale cover-up for the bagman of the Biden crime family is nothing less than a betrayal against the United States. Says Maxey, quote, the FBI had this on the 9th of December, 2019. I suppose the first person betrayed was the sitting U.S. president in an impeachment hearing when the FBI had the exculpatory evidence in their hands to have that end instantly, but they did nothing. The American people have been utterly betrayed because I guarantee you, says Maxey, Joe Biden couldn't run for dog catcher if the American people knew about this laptop. Also vying for that top spot, at least more or less chronologically as we review the week, is another batch of documents from Pfizer revealing, yeah, we knew all along how we were planning on killing you, and we didn't want to let you know, but quietly, this will come out behind the scenes. We knew darn well we were going to kill hundreds of millions and make billions in the process. We didn't tell you, though. What we said instead? It's safe and effective. Ha ha, April fools. They may force us to release some of the documents to show just how culpable we are, but we're not really going to come right out and admit we knew darn well what we were doing. And Fauci did, too. From strangesounds.org, just to let you know, says the headline, Pfizer did finally release another batch of those documents come April 1, 2022. And at this point, you might even say the real April Fool's joke was they knew most people would never be able to read this report, no matter how long they managed to delay it, because they're dead already. The next batch of Pfizer documents from the FDA has been produced, it says, over 11,000 pages, as well as the unredacted version of the post-marketing experience report. Meanwhile, the Pfizer CEO dares to continue to try to claim that people who spread what they laughably call misinformation, as opposed to what? Telling you that you're already dead? About the COVID vaccines, which his company forces people to receive, with help, of course, from the White House and the other criminals that are covering up for the mass murder here. And they make tens of billions of dollars in the process. Well, those people who are trying to let you know about it are the real criminals, they say. And so much for safe and effective. Because the document dump ends with a full 9 pages of reported adverse events, many of them autoimmune disease related. Hey, isn't that the point? Destroy the immune system and that's what you get. With this in mind, think of the incredible social pressure, says Strange Sounds, that they've put the American people through. Think of all the people locked in their homes, fired from their jobs, because they didn't want this poison injected into their bodies. This is, of course, the greatest conspiracy of our lifetime, and what the documents show is it ain't over yet, because while everyone's eyes have been distracted by Russia, or Ukraine, the WHO has quietly been moving forward with what they, well, it's not funny, but it would laughably be called a plandemic treaty, which supersedes the laws of any countries evil enough to sign their citizenry up for it. And Republicans have joined with Democrats to pass, of course, the National Digital Vaccine Registry. Later, it'll be called the Mark of the Beast, but that's still a ways down the road. We've got to get people all prepped for it first. Deep down in the pages is this. Among the adverse events reported into the Pfizer safety sick during the cumulative period, only those having what they call a complete workflow cycle in safety database, meaning they have progressed to distribution or closed workflow status. All of this, folks, is a way of saying, hey, if it's not serious enough to kill you immediately, and maybe even if it is, we're going to do everything we can to keep it out of the database here, are included in the monthly SMSR. And this approach prevents, says Pfizer, the inclusion of cases that are not fully processed, hence not accurately reflecting final information. I guess final information is a death certificate. Due to the large number of spontaneous adverse event reports, though, received for the product, yeah, they admit that, the MAH has prioritized the processing of serious cases in order to meet the expedited regulatory reporting timelines. Yeah, we wanted it to take 70 years. We're going to have to do it in mere years instead. But by that time, most of you who've taken the multiple doses and your boosters will be dead, so you'll never know. They go on to talk about the compliance metrics, how they're monitored weekly. Non-serious cases, and that means you didn't die, I think, have been entered into the safety database no later than 4 calendar days from receipt. But here's the good news. Pfizer has taken a number of actions to alleviate the large increase of adverse event reports, including technology enhancements. Yeah, we're doing a better job of technology used to cover all this up. And process and workflow solutions, as well as increasing the number of data entry and case processing colleagues. Yeah, we're having to hire more people just to keep up with the number of you folks who are being permanently injured or just plain dropping over dead. And what's really hard, of course, is trying to keep a lid on all of that. By the way, this is backdated. They have added all of these people with an expected total of more than 1,800 additional employees by the end of June 2021. And that explains how come they've managed to keep all of this off the radar for almost another year. If you're not angry, folks, it's probably because you're already dead. I'm going to call this a related story very briefly. 769 athletes, summarizes the burning platform, have collapsed in just the past year. And hey, since when have we ever seen an athlete collapse on the field without it having been due to a collision with another player or an object? Once, twice, but now 769 times in 1 year, and those are just the ones that are being reported by a waste stream media that's doing their damnedest to keep you from knowing about it anyway. And I guess, as we've reported before, a billion of your taxpayer bucks to help them keep a lid on it didn't hurt either. It's not normal, definitely, for so many young athletes to suffer from cardiac arrest or die while playing their sport, but no doubt about it, suggests the burning platform, it's happening, and it certainly isn't normal. And many of these heart issues and deaths, who could have thought it so coincidentally, come shortly after they get their COVID vaccine, which isn't a vaccine at all, but may in fact be a lot closer to Zyklon B, as your host has been saying for a long time. The sheer numbers themselves point to the obvious connection.
The one thing we know, the COVID vaccine is neither a vaccine, and for crying out loud, nor is it safe and effective. And here I do have to note, remember when that liar in the White House said, if you take the poke, you won't get it? Now, they tell you, openly, you can take the poke all you want. Not only are you probably gonna get it, as the statistics make very clear, but it doesn't even stop you from passing it on. Matter of fact, may help on that score, since it turns you into a human spike protein bioweapons factory. If the waste stream media had any intelligence or integrity at all, folks, they'd be asking the question, what's the point of this damn thing? And the answer would be clear, which is why they don't ask the question. It's not about protecting you from anything. It's about killing as many people as they can possibly get away with before Americans wake up and realize they've been had.
From there, on to another one of those stories that seems to have taken well over a year to have come out. And even left-leaning Politico more or less got this one right. Following a two-day bench trial, a judge has issued the first outright acquittal of a January 6th riot defendant, who never should have been charged in the first place, if the prosecutors had any integrity whatsoever. But it's about time, regardless. Following that two-day trial in the U.S. District Court in Washington, District of Criminals, New Mexico engineer Matthew Martin was acquitted Wednesday on four misdemeanor charges by District Court Judge Trevor McFadden. After Martin claimed, he thought the police, and you would too if you saw the video, had allowed him and others entrance to the Capitol Rotunda on January 6, 2021. Judge McFadden said, based on the video of the scene, the assertion was at least plausible, all I can add to that is duh, and that furthermore, prosecutors failed to prove the case beyond a reasonable doubt, and double duh on that one. People were streaming by, said the judge, and the officers made no attempt to stop the people, and that's arguably putting it mildly, folks, they did everything but hold the doors open. In issuing the acquittal, the judge said that Martin's conduct was, quote, about as minimal and not serious as I can imagine, because he spent most of his time inside the Capitol making videos with his phone, which the judge says wasn't much different than what members of the press were doing. Quote, he seemed quite quiet and orderly. He did not shout. He did not raise his flag. And it was on only one of the four misdemeanor charges against the Los Alamos engineer that the judge had to say that even if it was a close call, quote, under our system of justice, close calls go to the defendant. You'd think the prosecutor might have been able to figure that out. And if that was some of the coverage from left-wing Politico, I do have to go next to the Daily Mail out of the UK to show you what left-leaning anti-Bill of Rights journalism really looks like. Their headline says the following. The winning capital riot defense? Blame the cops! Government defense contractor becomes first defendant acquitted of all charges after arguing that officers opened the door to the rotunda and let them in. And that, the Daily Mail seems to be suggesting, is what? Not a good defense against a claim that you're trying to violently overthrow the government of the United States? Well, actually, no. That's not what this guy was charged with, but they're obviously trying to throw a whole lot of stuff at the wall and hope that something, anything, sticks. The Daily Mail goes on to say about four paragraphs in that video played at the trial, listen to this carefully, appeared to show an officer moving his arm in a waving motion inside the building as the rioters, who seemed awfully well behaved for rioters, folks, after all, they weren't even burning, looting, and occasionally murdering, like Antifa and BLM so-called peaceful protesters. Anyway, as the rioters moved past them, good grief. The Daily Mail and all of those others who are persecuting innocent Americans for merely trying to defend their God-given, once constitutionally protected rights to do things like petition their government for a redress of grievance, and I guess a fake, rigged election might fit that definition, is shameless. But even the left-wing coverage managed to acknowledge that the verdict could be viewed as a message from Judge McFadden to prosecutors, persecutors is more like it, that pursuing criminal charges against nearly every demonstrator who simply entered the Capitol on January 6th was unwise, and that resources should have been trained more intensely instead on people who committed actual crimes, those accused of violence, and there weren't very many at all, unless you count the FBI informants, undercover agents, and a few bad cops, of conspiring to block the electoral vote count. Who's he talking about there? Oh, yeah. Evidently not the ones that caught it or knew what was going on even over a year ago. Politico does add this, folks, and it's another telling example of just how far gone the rule of law in this country is. Defendant Martin didn't show visible emotion in the courtroom as he listened to the verdicts on Wednesday, but told reporters outside the courthouse that he'd hoped to get his job back as an engineer for a government contractor in Los Alamos, New Mexico, who was fired after his employer learned of his involvement in the January 6 events. Martin also lost his Q-level Energy Department security clearance. And yeah, your host saw that, and I gotta admit, that rubbed me the wrong way too. How many high-level intelligence officials with much higher clearances than that do you think have lost them for, I don't know, putting their signature on a fraudulent document, claiming that the Hunter Biden laptop was not exactly what it turned out to be? An example of why the criminals now running the government should never have been allowed anywhere near the Oval Office. How many former DNIs or chiefs of the CIA have lost their security clearances, much less their pensions, for having committed felony perjury? And gee, come to think of it, how many high-ranking so-called doctors in, say, the NIH or NAIAD have lost their jobs, their clearances, or even their freedom for having committed treason against the American people or for their part in developing bioweapons that by now have killed millions, with more on the way? So yeah, there's good news in here, folks. One of many, many, many Americans who's been persecuted, and worse, has finally been found not guilty of charges that never should have been brought in the first place. Meanwhile, let's not overlook the fact that the real criminals are not only running the show at every level, they're still committing treason and consolidating their power. Case in point, spokesliar for the traitor-in-chief, Press Secretary Jen Psaki, on Wednesday confirmed that the criminally evil, senile quid pro Joe Biden is giving illegal aliens free taxpayer-funded smartphones. And yeah, folks, that's just for starters. Quote, our team in Texas is saying that you guys are starting to give smartphones to border crossers, hoping that they'll use the phones to check in or to be tracked. What part of that, asked Peter Ducey to Psaki, is supposed to deter people from crossing illegally into the states? But Psaki did confirm that Biden is indeed giving illegal aliens free, taxpayer-funded smartphones, saying that, well, illegal aliens are supposed to use those free phones to check in with the Border Patrol, although they almost never do. Still, though, you're supposed to believe those free phones will somehow be used to monitor the illegals as they use their bus passes and free plane rides to rove around the interior of the United States. But what do you bet that at least some of them know better than to use those free phones to coordinate with their terror cells? They get themselves burners instead. Wonder if the taxpayers are footing the bill for those. They're certainly paying for everything else associated with this criminal action on a huge scale. More from the, yeah, there really is a conspiracy, and they're not even trying to hide it anymore files. This from J.D. Hayes at Natural News under the headline about a former top DOJ official, Department of Just Us, who's revealed a secret plot. It's called Project 65, with the intent, destroy all Trump lawyers and anything to do with trying to suggest there was crookedness involved in stealing the 2020 election. Yes, they must be punished. A former ranking official, it says, within the Department of Just Us, one of the most corrupt in all of a corrupt swamp, folks, is sounding the alarm, can you imagine, over a plot to professionally destroy any and all lawyers associated with then-President Donald Trump's many cases alleging, with no shortage of facts, that electoral results from various battleground states where unconstitutional changes to voting procedures took place to boot ahead of the 2020 election were involved in chicanery. In an article posted at Revolver News, former Assistant Attorney General at the DOJ, Jeffrey Clark, writes about what's called Project 65, which he said is a plot hatched by various left-wing extremists, and they got a million of them, but among them is the infamous David Brock, founder of the far-left so-called media watchdog called Media Matters for America, to take down attorneys in ways that he believes will permanently damage what's left of the legal system. He calls it a founding pillar of that system back when we had one. Quote, the even-handed application of the law is a principle, said Jeffrey Clark, that must be defended. Everywhere, balance and perspective are under attack. Whatever the cost, though, of America's process-heavy adversarial contest, that feature of our polity is a key bulwark of liberty, he said. Due process is not something to be trifled with, deconstructed, or thrown away based on the passions of the political moment. Yet, that's happening right now. The left has set the lines of battle. Any lawyers who work for President Trump with verve and ingenuity, along with any lawyers he's retained to mount his various 2020 election contests, must be crushed, they believe, must have their noses rubbed into the dirt, must, if possible, lose their jobs and even their right to practice law, he continued. Hey, anybody remember Al Gore's hanging chad issue with the Supreme Court back in the year 2000? Yeah, at least they had the decency to hear that one. But as everybody here has noticed, they didn't go after those lawyers with tongs now, did they? Which takes us to the break. We'll be right back. Just like yesterday, then I'll get on my knees and pray. Welcome back again now to the second segment of the show for this evening. I'm your host, Mark Hall, and let's continue that theme of stories the waste stream just doesn't want you to know about.
They've been lying about them since the beginning, but ultimately, it looks like whether they like it or not, the truth is going to come out in spite of them. This story comes from Natural News and Lance D. Johnson about a major tennis tournament in Florida that is revealing the lie to the point where even some of the waste stream is finally having to report on it. Some of the world's top athletes, begins Johnson, are either collapsing on the field or the court or becoming too weak to play their favorite sport. At the Miami Open recently, 15 fully vaccinated players withdrew during the competition, leaving spectators baffled. Yeah, they had no idea that this thing was killing people. Some of the crowd's favorites had to leave the competition early, including Paula Badosa from Spain and Yannick Sinner from Italy, who retired from their quarterfinal contest on the very same day. Earlier, Rafael Nadal had to leave the court for treatment after he experienced chest pain during his match against Taylor Fritz at the Indian Wells final. He was able to continue, but was clearly struggling with breathing as the unheralded Fritz completed an upset and handed Nadal his first loss of the season. All three players, as it turned out, succumbed to the Wuhan coronavirus, that's COVID-1984, aka the Zyklon B stroke poke, vaccine mandate imposed by the satanically evil, I put that word in there, Australian Open in 2021. And their health has apparently deteriorated ever since then. It was the Australian Open that banned, as you may recall, well-informed, unvaccinated players from the sport, including the number one men's player, Novak Djokovic, who faced discrimination for choosing not to partake in the forced human experimentation. And although Djokovic was persecuted, at least his heart, brain, and immune system still functioned normally. Despite being slandered and discriminated against, writes Johnson, he can still play his favorite sport with dignity and has retained authority over his health and body autonomy. Even the corporate media, as I mentioned up front, has finally had to start reporting on these medical anomalies. Yahoo Sports published an article entitled, "What's Going On? Tennis World Stunned, Stunned, I Tell You, After Miami Open Carnage." And during that Miami Open, five fully vaxxed men had to retire from the competition, including Germany's Matt Morang, Holger Rune of Denmark, Jan-Lennard Struff of Germany, and Riley Opelka of the United States, as well as Sinner. And there were a total of 10 women, also fully vaxxed, who were forced to withdraw. Furthermore, continues the story, it's not just tennis players, and as we've known for quite a while, soccer players that are keeling over with chest pains, myocarditis, strokes, and shortness of breath after receiving these bioweapon injections. The Tour de France, which spans over 2,000 miles, hosts the world's best cyclists. But in its entire 118-year history, only a single cyclist has ever suddenly collapsed on the course due to health reasons. Up until this year, that is. When three professional cyclists have collapsed on the course with cardiac events and two of them died. The first person fatally affected was John Paul of Scotland, who passed away on March 9, 2022. And after becoming the junior sprint champion back in 2011, Paul represented Scotland at the 2010 and 2014 Commonwealth Games, and he was taken out, arguably, by the COVID stroke poke at the age of 28. Italian cyclist Sonny Colbrelli suffered a cardiac event after crossing the finish line of the Volta a Catalunya in Spain and was saved by a defibrillator, but may never compete again due to permanent cardiovascular damage. And there was a 23-year-old water polo player from Romania who suffered a similar fate during a live game when he left the pool after a heart attack. Resuscitation failed, and an hour later, he too was pronounced dead. There's a deadly lesson here, folks, and it's getting harder and harder to hide. I'm going to call this a brief related piece, also from the same source, this time via Ramon Tomy at Natural News, who says that fetal deaths caused by the Wuhan coronavirus so-called vaccines are almost 2,000% greater compared with those associated with any and every other vaccine, according to Dr. Peterson Pierre of America's Frontline Doctors in a recent Frontline Flash on their website. He showed statistics from VAERS, the Vaccine Adverse Event Reporting System, to highlight the, quote, effects that these shots have on the unborn. There have been over 500 million injections of the Zyklon B into people's arms so far, and VAERS data shows at least 3,700 fetal deaths connected with the COVID-19 vaccine. Remember, folks, they don't even begin to count all of them. But of the 4 billion doses of other non-COVID-type vaccines injected during that same time period, there were only 1,369 fetal deaths. So he said, if you do the math, you realize that since the COVID-19 shots have been available and increasingly being mandated, there's been a 1,925% increase in fetal deaths.
And I'm sure, folks, that Dr. Demicide is thrilled. Changing gears a bit now, but still talking about things the Waystream doesn't want reported. This one comes from Hal Turner's radio show, who says that in a staggering court filing late Monday night, Special Counsel John Durham, for the first time, said that Hillary Clinton's campaign, her researchers, Sick, and others, formed what he called a, quote, joint venture or conspiracy for the purpose of weaving the Russian collusion story to harm Trump's election chances and then also harm the start of his presidency. Quote, these parties acted as joint venturers and therefore should be considered as co-conspirators, he wrote. He's also unearthed a text message showing Hillary Clinton campaign lawyer Michael Sussman falsely told the FBI that he was not working on behalf of any client when he delivered the now discredited anti-Trump research in the lead-up to the 2016 election. In fact, he was working for campaign Clinton and another client, say prosecutors. But the existence of that text message between Sussman and then FBI General Counsel James Baker was revealed in a court filing late Monday night by Durham's team. Prosecutors said they intend to show that Sussman gave a false story to the FBI, but then told the truth about working on behalf of the Clinton campaign when he later testified before Congress. The text message, where he claimed that, quote, I'm coming on my own, not on behalf of a client or company, want to help the Bureau, thanks, will become essential evidence, if there's ever a trial, to show that Sussman lied to the FBI. And remember how many other people have suffered really nasty fates for even being accused of lying to the FBI, especially if it turned out later to have been the FBI that was lying? Oh yeah, but they all have something very different in common, don't they? Then House Intelligence Committee Republican Investigative Counsel Kash Patel has weighed in on the matter, saying that Durham has just shown the whole world what major pieces of our Russiagate investigation revealed. Hard evidence, emails and text messages showing that the Clinton campaign, Fusion GPS, Perkins Coie, Jaffe, and the media were all synced in August of 2016, pushing the false Alpha Bank server story, while also all working on the infamous Steele dossier matter. And he said this new filing by Durham is perhaps one of the most significant in the entire investigation of this sordid matter to date. The continuing war on free speech and what's left of the rest of the Bill of Rights took an interesting turn over the last few days when Elon Musk, not a fellow that your host is particularly fond of, I have to admit, although admittedly he does occasionally have a tendency to actually look like he wants to do the right thing, took a 9.2% stake in Twitter and recently was announced to have a seat on the board there, which sent the left, says Zero Hedge and Tyler Durden's coverage, into an anti-free speech tailspin. Because, as they put it, Musk has been an outspoken proponent, can you believe it, of free speech. And the fact that big tech has been failing to adhere to that, he says, quote, fundamentally undermines democracy. And in a recent poll, he asked, do you believe Twitter rigorously adheres to this principle? To which only 29.6% of the respondents said yes, while 70.4% overwhelmingly said no. And on Monday, noxious CNN host Brian Stelter said there is fear among the knee-jerk left over Musk's move. Quote, there's interest in billionaires, he said. There's celebration of the Musk. There's also fear, I think, sometimes, or wariness of, okay, so here's the richest man on the planet who just bought a big chunk of one of our most important communications tools, says Stelter. He's also one of the biggest owners of satellites in the world, so he's incredibly powerful. Incredibly, I don't know, am I allowed to use the word strange when talking about Elon Musk? Unquote. Well, except, note Zero Hedge, billionaires have been controlling information for decades, and none of the left had a problem about that. With the possible exception of actual journalist and commentator Glenn Greenwald, who really does seem to believe sincerely in free speech, and who writes, obviously with a bit of the tongue-in-cheek here, bring back the good and benevolent oligarchs to police the internet and our political debates for us. Google loves us and knows what's best for us, not like this irreverent ruffian. Meanwhile, independent journalist Andy Ngo cites a data scientist at Twitter who goes by the name of Cassie Nick Rumbaugh and is very upset that Elon Musk is now the largest stakeholder in Twitter to say, a prominent transphobe buying a large stake in Twitter is not at all funny. Which takes me back to Glenn Greenwald, who notes,
Well, a world where tech billionaires and or the almighty state don't censor their adversaries just terrifies these people. Citing in turn the Columbia Buell, which puts it this way. It tells you everything you need to know about the left, that a Twitter that doesn't censor their political opponents terrifies them. Zero Hedge also cites a tweet from Michael Tracy, who writes, Elon Musk is totally unfit to run Twitter. He might not spend every waking hour thinking of new ways to control, monitor, and ban speech. So it appears, concludes Tyler Durden, that the Wokerati are more than happy to allow what they call free speech when it's their speech. But when that so-called free speech includes anything they don't agree with, tolerance goes out the window and tantrums dominate. Perhaps the real driver of this fear of Elon goes back to his comments that, quote, wokeness basically gives mean people a shield to be mean and cruel, armored in false virtue, unquote. And no wonder they hate the guy. Weighing in on the same topic, Jim Hoff for the Gateway Pundit says that Twitter has for years censored, shadow banned, and deleted top conservative accounts on their platform. For years they said it was because, you know, hate speech or fake news or even unapproved opinions, whereupon they would be proven wrong on almost everything that they had previously censored. And they deleted not only the Gateway Pundit, but also President Trump, James O'Keefe, Alex Jones, Owen Schroyer, InfoWars, and a number of prominent conservative accounts over the last 5 years, while in fact most conservative accounts are at least censored or shadow banned. So on Monday they say there was hope that Twitter might change its fascist ways once Elon Musk became the company's top shareholder. But on Tuesday, the evil Twitter quashed that noise and released a statement vowing never to let President Trump back on their platform again. Despite Elon Musk vowing to, quote, make significant improvements to the socialist media platform after becoming their largest shareholder and a member of their board of directors. Said the company to the Daily Mail on Tuesday, Twitter is committed to impartiality in the development and enforcement of its policies and rules.
That's my story. Oh, that's my story. My story, and I'm sticking to it.
Our policy decisions are not determined by the board of directors or shareholders, and we have no plans to reverse any policy decisions.
And a widely known and evidently well-respected commentator who goes by the pseudonym of Cat Turd Waden, saying Twitter just released a statement that basically says we don't care what the shareholders, the actual owners of the company, and board members say, the current woke management will do whatever we want. I can't stop laughing. When it comes to the hypocritical knee-jerk left, Colorado has one of the very worst in the form of a scumbag masquerading as governor named Gerald Paulus, who signed a bill yesterday to legalize pre-birth infanticide right up to the moment when the head comes out without, as he put it, government interference, saying, if you can believe it, listen to this, quote, this bill codifies a person's right to make reproductive health care decisions free from government interference, unquote. Now, when it comes to what we want to force you to wear across your face or inject into your body, ha, 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 it's a whole different story. And if it kills kids, well, that's the goal anyway. Quote, in the state of Colorado, the very serious decision to start a pregnancy or to end a pregnancy with medical assistance remains between a person, their doctor, and their faith, he said. Whereupon he attacked the states of Arizona, Texas, and Kentucky for banning infanticide, claiming that, not what they do to the right to keep and bear arms or freedom of speech, assembly, or worship, was government overreach. And he said, quote, what we're seeing in states like Texas and Arizona and Kentucky is an enormous government overreach, and listen to this, folks, try to keep your lunch down, an enormous government infringement of the individual liberties that we hold sacred in this country, unquote. We don't, of course, hold anything that's actually in the Bill of Rights sacred, because you peons don't have a right to do anything, period, that we don't want you to. And we'll infringe the living hell out of it if we feel like it. What a stinking bunch of hypocrites. Which leads me to today's famine review. They are starting to admit this might be a possibility, though. First, via Michael Snyder and the mostimportantnews.com, Zero Hedge and others have it up as well. And it's about the very alarming global food shortage, which obviously has already begun, and it's only going to get worse in the months ahead, says Snyder. I realize it isn't good news, but it is important that people be aware of what was planned and executed so well and is now here.
The pace at which things are changing around the globe right now is absolutely breathtaking. Most people still assume that life will carry on as it normally has. Well, up until the last couple of years, you'd think that would have been a clue. Unfortunately, the truth is a very planetary emergency has been developed right before our very eyes. So here are 20 emerging global food shortage facts that ought to help you wake up. Number one, one of France's most important government officials, their foreign affairs minister, Jean-Yves Le Drian, says the EU must get to grips with the prospect that the Ukraine war, oh yeah, that's the problem, could prompt an extremely serious global food crisis. Number two, America's imposter in the fake White House, sleepy, creepy quid pro Joe Biden, recently admitted that food shortages, and he had a lot to do with it, or at least his puppet masters did, are, quote, going to be real, and his regime is now openly talking about famine to describe what they've managed to accomplish. And outside of mandating the poison poke and killing a whole lot of people that way, folks, that's probably their other major single accomplishment. Number three, it's being reported, food prices in German supermarkets are intended to go up, will soon go up, between 20% and 50%. And this is just days after Germany reported their highest inflation in generations. February headline CPI soared at 7.6% annually, blowing away all expectations. Hey, kind of like what happened in the once-free United States. And as of Monday, they've moved one more step closer to a return of Weimar-type hyperinflation, when the German Retail Association, or HDE, has said that consumers should prepare for another wave of price hikes for everyday goods and groceries. Reuters reporting that prices at German retail chains are expected, again, to be up 20 to 50%. Similarly, rationing has already begun in Spain and in Greece. The head of BlackRock, as your host reported here last week, is warning that for the very first time, the latest generation of Americans is going to, quote, go into a store and not be able to get what they want. As you've probably heard as well, number seven, since this time last year, planting season in other words, fertilizer prices have gone up by as much as 300% globally. Farmers in Africa aren't going to be able to afford to plant. Russia is normally one of the biggest global exporters of fertilizer, but hey, the regime has pretty well shut that down. Guess who's going to suffer? Hint, not the Russians. They'll be able to sell it to other places that might like their people to eat. Number 10, in a typical year, Russia and Ukraine collectively account for about 30% of all global wheat exports. Goodbye to that. Half of Africa's wheat exports come from one of those two places. And, of course, you may have heard this one, number 13. At least one Russian official has warned that that nation may soon only export food to what they refer to as friendly nations. I guess that means those that don't allow crooked elections to undermine their once-free populace. Oh, yeah, and let's not forget, there's one more major plandemic that's causing huge food supply shocks. On Friday, another 5 million egg-laying chickens were destroyed in Iowa because of booga, 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 the bird flu, where the total has now been pushed beyond 13 million birds dead as a result of this latest, overreaction. Basically, folks, that means they find an infection, they kill the whole farm. And add Snyder in his number 16 here, the total national death toll of birds, courtesy of the FDA and the other three-letter agencies killing them en masse, claiming bird flu is the problem, 22 million egg-laying chickens, 18 million broiler chickens, 1.9 million pullet and other commercial chickens, and almost 2 million turkeys. Meanwhile, China's agricultural minister has announced that their winter wheat harvest, too, could be the worst in history. The United States, likewise, is forecasting a disastrous winter wheat harvest due to severe drought. Thank you, geoengineering. And during a recent interview, one prominent U.S. farmer stated that most Americans won't like it when your grocery bill is up $1,000 in a month. The head of the UN World Food Program, SIC, said that what the planet is now facing, thank you, Joe, and the other New World Order globalists, is unlike anything that's been seen since World War II. And we've been warned, says Snyder, over and over again that this day was coming, and now it's here. From there, we go to Mike Adams and a story that appeared over the weekend in the Epoch Times by Alan Stein, who said that Adams and others have been warning He calls them doomsday preppers of hard times ahead, as preparedness, thank you Joe Biden, has now managed to go mainstream. Food scarcity, food vouchers, food riots, and flash mobs. It begins. All of that's coming, and soon, says Texas-based food scientist and Health Ranger podcaster Mike Adams, who, like many others, sees dire events unfolding in America in the short term. His advice, people had better get prepared now because they won't be able to come pretty soon. The thing to really watch for, he said, is food inflation. My position is we're going to see food riots in America before the end of this year. We're going to see flash mobs in grocery stores, especially for meat products, things that Big Brother doesn't want you to have because Bill Gates has all the alternatives, like fake meat and bioweapons factory-produced meat already locked up. Grocery stores are going to respond with increasing security and checkpoints, says Adams, and at some point, he says, we're probably going to see an attempt at price controls and rationing. Isn't that what communists always do? And let's not forget, that means if you think it's bad now, just wait until they try to fix it. And what's more, of course, Adams is hardly alone. As your host and many, many others have been pointing out for a long time now, folks, this has not only been prepared for, planned, and now well executed, it was inevitable. Much of what's going on, though, is built into the system at this point. The supply chain breakdown is a fait accompli. The destruction of the economy is almost complete. And, oh, yeah, let's not forget that things like diesel prices end up representing a double whammy to the economy. It's going to cost more to transport food as well as to harvest it. Grocery stores, says Adams, are inevitably going to respond with increased security and checkpoints. And at some point, he said, we're probably going to see an attempt at price controls and rationing. Especially certain types of things, and he expects that the vaccine passport app will eventually mutate into a food rationing app. And when it comes to fertilizer, he added that in North America 2 years ago, it cost about $200 an acre to fertilize a 1,000-acre commercial farm. But right now, during spring planting season, farmers can expect to spend between $1,200 and $2,000 an acre for that same fertilizer. And guess who's going to end up paying for that when it comes to basic necessities? Furthermore, he said, many farmers are going to decide not to plant. In addition, the diesel fuel prices and diesel fuel scarcity is going to enter into their equation about whether or not they should plant. Because what if they do plant and then realize they can't afford to harvest it or take the food to market? Not like we haven't seen that of late, now is it? The upshot, he said, fewer farmers are planting, that means less food to go around, and oh yeah, guess what that means for prices. On other aspects of the prepping front, Lori Hunt at Practical Preppers in South Carolina said the supply chain in the United States continues to crumble. More Americans are realizing it takes 4 trips now to different home improvement stores for parts to make home repairs instead of just finding all their needs in a single store. This is making folks realize it extends to everything, too. Food, books, solar equipment, and considering Ukraine is a source for critical raw materials in the solar industry, it's going to get much worse over coming months, she told the Epoch Times. Many of our customers are trying to move toward energy independence, and this is making a greater demand of a diminishing supply situation. We're urging our customers to be prepared for a 2 to 4 month wait to amass all the parts needed now for their systems. Many installers around the United States are telling us they're experiencing the same. Byron Walker, founder and CEO of Survival Frog in Denver, told the Epoch Times, we've struggled with supply chain issues and things only appear to be getting worse. Finally, Allied Marketing Research reported that the global incident and emergency market, once valued at $75.5 billion as of 2017, is now projected to reach $423 billion by 2025. The increased urgency for emergency preparedness, they said, are driving the growth of the global incident and emergency management market. And not only that, the story goes on to say that the price hikes that we're now seeing are here to stay. And it's getting tougher and tougher to do it, too. As other preppers have noted, the state of being prepared is exponentially limited by the time it takes to try to get there and other factors. Quote, every dollar spent today is worth less in value towards preparations than a dollar you would have spent or could have spent 3 years ago. Therefore, by waiting to begin, says a video blogger from North Carolina, Matt, the magic prepper, you'll inherently be able to prepare less and less. And that's most obviously apparent when you relate it to things like ammunition. Stocking up now provides you with anywhere from 50% to 75% less ammo than you would have got for the same amount spent on it just a few years back. Still, though, better late than never, because if you wait too much longer, it may end up being never. Said Mike Adams, foreseeing what he called a reawakening of freedom and self-reliance in the way we grow and produce food, quote, I think this is a red pill moment
for the people of the world. They need to be more self-reliant. We need a decentralization of food production. And he said, I'm a big proponent of that, decentralization, food grown locally. But the bad news is only about 5% of people in the United States are ready for what is not only coming, folks, but it's now here. Still, said Adams, the more people prepare, the less they'll panic when the shortages become obvious. As always, folks, forewarned is forearmed.